relationship and community practices. Creating and maintaining a Sangha. In society, much of our suffering comes from feeling disconnected from one another. We often don't feel a real connection even with people we live close to, our neighbors, our co-workers, and even our family members. Each person lives separately, cut off from the support of the community. Practicing mindfulness, we begin to see our connection with other human beings. To flourish in our own practice and to support others, we need a community. In Buddhism, a practice community is called a Sangha. The Buddha had a Sangha of monks, nuns, laywomen, and laymen. We can make our families into a Sangha. We can make our workplace into a Sangha, our neighborhood into a Sangha, local government into a Sangha, and even the Congress could turn into a Sangha if everyone knew the art of deep listening and loving speech. Being with a Sangha can heal these feelings of isolation and separation. We practice together. Sometimes we eat side by side and clean pots together. Just by practicing with other practitioners in daily activities, we can experience a tangible feeling of love and acceptance. The Sangha is a garden full of many varieties of trees and flowers. When we can look at ourselves and at others as beautiful, unique flowers and trees, we can truly grow to understand and love one another. One flower may bloom early in the spring, and another flower may bloom in late summer. One tree may bear many fruits, and another tree may offer cool shade. No one plant is greater or lesser or the same as any other plant in the garden. Each member of the Sangha also has unique gifts to offer the community. We each have areas that need attention as well. When we can appreciate each member's contribution and see our weaknesses as potentials for growth, we can learn to live together harmoniously. Our practice is to see that we are a flower or a tree, and we are the whole garden as well, all interconnected. To be really means to interbe. Just as a flower relies on the sunshine, on the cloud, on the earth in order to be, so it is with all of us. None of us can be by ourselves alone. Interbeing is the teaching of the Buddha that everything is made by and made up of everything else. If we return everything to its source, there's nothing left anymore. If we return the sunshine to the sun, the water to the cloud, the soil to the earth, then there can no longer be any flower. A flower is made only of non-flower elements. That is why we say a flower is empty of self. It's empty of a separate self. It's full of everything and empty of a separate self. We are empty, and we are made of the cosmos. Looking at one person, we can see the whole cosmos and all our ancestors. In each person, we can see the air, water, journeys, joys, and sorrows that have come before us. We contain all information needed for the understanding of the cosmos. If we can see the nature of interbeing, then we will suffer much less, and we will understand why it is important to be in community. In practicing together as a community, our practice of mindfulness becomes more joyful, relaxed, and steady. We are bells of mindfulness for each other, supporting and reminding each other along the path of practice. With the support of the community, we can practice to cultivate peace and joy within and around us as a gift for all those whom we love and care for. We can cultivate our society in freedom, solid in our deepest aspiration and free from our fears, misunderstandings, and suffering. Practice. Building a Sangha is like planting a sunflower. You need to be aware of which conditions will support the flower's growth and which conditions will obstruct its growth. You need healthy seeds, skilled gardeners, and plenty of sunshine and room to grow. When you engage in Sangha building, the most important thing to remember is that we are doing it together. The more you embrace the Sangha, the more you can let go of the feeling of a separate self. You can relax into the collective wisdom and insights of the Sangha and see clearly that the Sangha eyes and hands and heart are greater than that of any individual member of the Sangha. If you live with your family or with close friends, this is a good place to begin. Your family and friends can be your Sangha. You can also create a workplace Sangha by practicing love and understanding with co-workers and seeing each person as a beloved brother or sister. You can practice walking meditation every time you move through a corridor. If possible, sit, walk, or eat mindfully together with one other person during your breaks. You can invite the bell and invite others to do so with you, or practice telephone meditation at work. A Sangha may start small. It can be a Sangha of two. If even just two people create a Sangha and an atmosphere of mindfulness, the peace and harmony around you will grow, and soon your Sangha will grow too. Beginning anew. To begin anew is to look deeply and honestly at ourselves, our past actions, speech, and thoughts, and to create a fresh beginning within ourselves and in our relationships with others. We practice beginning anew to clear our mind and keep our practice fresh. When a difficulty arises in our relationships and one of us feels resentment or hurt, we know it is time to begin anew. Beginning anew helps us develop our kind speech and compassionate listening, because it is a practice of recognition and appreciation of the positive elements within our Sangha. Recognizing others' positive traits allows us to see our own good qualities as well. Along with these good traits, we each have areas of weakness, such as talking out of our anger or being caught in our misperceptions. As in a garden, when we water the flowers of loving-kindness and compassion in each other, we also take energy away from the weeds of anger, jealousy, and misperception. We can practice beginning anew every day by expressing our appreciation to the people in our community and apologizing right away when we do or say something that hurts them. We can politely let others know when we have been hurt as well. The health and happiness of the whole community depends on the harmony, peace, and joy that exist between everyone. Practice. At Plum Village, we practice beginning anew every week. Everyone sits in a circle with a vase of fresh flowers in the center, and we follow our breathing as we wait for the facilitator to begin. The ceremony has three parts: flower watering, expressing regrets, and expressing hurts and difficulties. This practice can prevent feelings of hurt from building up over the weeks and helps make the situation safe for everyone in the community. We begin with flower watering. When someone is ready to speak, she joins her palms and the others join their palms to show that she has the right to speak. Then she stands, walks slowly to the flowers, takes the vase in her hands, and returns to her seat. When she speaks, her words reflect the freshness and beauty of the flowers that are in her hands. During flower watering, the speaker acknowledges the wholesome, wonderful qualities of the others. It is not flattery. We always speak the truth. Everyone has strong points that can be seen with awareness. No one can interrupt the person holding the flowers. She is allowed as much time as she needs, and everyone else practices deep listening. When she has finished speaking, she stands up and slowly returns the vase to the center of the room. We should not underestimate the first step of flower watering. When we can sincerely recognize the beautiful qualities of other people, it is very difficult to hold on to our feelings of anger and resentment. We will naturally soften, and our perspective will become wider and more inclusive of the whole reality. When we are no longer caught in misperceptions, irritation, and judgment, we can easily find the way to reconcile ourselves with others in our community or family. The essence of this practice is to restore love and understanding between members of the community. The form that the practice takes needs to be appropriate to the situation and people involved. It is always helpful to consult with others who have more experience in the practice and have gone through similar difficulties in order to benefit from their experiences. In the second part of the ceremony, we express regrets for anything we have done to hurt others. It does not take more than one thoughtless phrase to hurt someone. The ceremony of beginning anew is an opportunity for us to recall some regret from earlier in the week and undo it. In the third part of the ceremony, we express ways in which others have hurt us. Loving speech is crucial. We want to heal the community, not harm it. We speak frankly, but we do not want to be destructive. Listening meditation is an important part of the practice. When we sit among a circle of friends who are all practicing deep listening, our speech becomes more beautiful and more constructive. We never blame or argue. In this final part of the ceremony, compassionate listening is crucial. We listen to another's hurts and difficulties with the willingness to relieve the suffering of the other person, not to judge or argue with her. We listen with all our attention. Even if we hear something that is not true, we continue to listen deeply so the other person can express her pain and release the tensions within herself. If we reply to her or correct her, the practice will not bear fruit. We just listen. If we need to tell the other person that her perception was not correct, we can do that a few days later, privately and calmly. Then, at the next beginning a new session, she may be the person who rectifies the error, and we will not have to say anything. We close the ceremony with a song, or by holding hands with everyone in the circle and breathing for a minute. Peace Treaty. Suppose our friend or partner says something unkind to us and we feel hurt. If we reply right away, we risk making the situation worse. Another option is to breathe in and out to calm ourselves. And when we are calm enough, say, "Darling, what you just said hurt me. I would like to look deeply into it, and I would like you to look deeply into it also." Then we can make an appointment for some time later in the week to look at it together. One person looking at the roots of our suffering is good, two people looking at it is better, and two people looking together is best. We may be at war with ourselves inside, hurting our bodies with drugs or alcohol. Now we have the opportunity to sign a treaty with our bodies, our feelings, and our emotions. Once we make a peace treaty with them, we can have some peace, and we can begin to be reconciled with our beloved. If there is a war inside us, it is very easy to start a war with our beloved, not to mention with our enemies. The way we talk to our loved ones and the way we act toward them determines if we are treating them as loved ones or as enemies. If our beloved is our enemy, how can we hope to have peace in this country and in the world? We all have the seed of wisdom in us. We know that punishing leads us nowhere, and yet we are always trying to punish someone. When our beloved says or does something that makes us suffer, we want to punish them, because we believe that by punishing them we will get some relief. There are times when we are lucid, and we know that this is childish and ignorant, because when we make our beloved ones suffer, they will also try to get some relief by punishing us in turn, and there will be an escalation of punishment. The peace treaty and the peace note are two tools to help us heal anger and hurt in our relationships. When we sign the peace treaty, we are making peace not just with the other person, but within ourselves. Practice. The text of the peace treaty is below. It helps to really sign it, as opposed to just reading about it. In the treaty, it suggests Friday night is the night for discussion. You can pick any night, but the treaty suggests Friday evening is good for two reasons. If it's Friday afternoon when you begin, you can pick the following Friday. First, you are still hurt, and it may be too risky if you begin discussing it now. You might say things that will make the situation worse. From now until Friday evening, you can practice looking deeply into the nature of your suffering, and the other person can too. While driving, you will also have a chance to look deeply into it. Before Friday night, one or both of you may see the root of the problem and be able to tell the other and apologize. Then on Friday night, you can have a cup of tea together and enjoy each other. This is the practice of meditation. Meditation is to calm ourselves and to look deeply into the nature of our suffering. If by Friday evening the suffering has not been transformed, you will be able to practice the art of Avalokiteshvara, one person expressing himself while the other person listens deeply. When you speak, you tell the deepest kind of truth using loving speech, the kind of speech the other person can understand and accept. While listening, you know that your listening must be of a good quality to relieve the other person of his suffering. The second reason for waiting until Friday is that when you neutralize that feeling on Friday evening, you have Saturday and Sunday to enjoy being together. Peace Treaty. In order that we may live long and happily together, in order that we may continually develop and deepen our love and understanding, we, the undersigned, vow to observe and practice the following. I, the one who is angry, agree to 1. Refrain from saying or doing anything that might cause further damage or escalate the anger. 2. Not suppress my anger. 3. Practice breathing and taking refuge in the island of myself. 4. Calmly, within 24 hours, tell the one who has made me angry about my anger and suffering, either verbally or by delivering a peace note. 5. Ask for an appointment for later in the week, for example, Friday evening, to discuss this matter more thoroughly, either verbally or by peace note. 6. Not say, I'm not angry, it's okay, I'm not suffering, there's nothing to be angry about, at least not enough to make me angry. 7. Practice breathing and looking deeply into my daily life, while sitting, lying down, standing and walking, in order to see A. the ways I myself have been unskillful at times, B. how I have hurt the other person because of my own habit energy, C. how the strong seed of anger in me is the primary cause of my anger, D. how the other person's suffering, which waters the seed of my anger, is the secondary cause, E. how the other person is only seeking relief from his or her own suffering, F. that as long as the other person suffers, I cannot be truly happy. 8. Apologize immediately, without waiting until the Friday evening, as soon as I realize my unskillfulness and lack of mindfulness. 9. Postpone the Friday meeting if I do not feel calm enough to meet with the other person. I, the one who has made the other angry, agree to 1. Respect the other person's feelings, not ridicule him or her, and allow enough time for him or her to calm down. 2. Not press for an immediate discussion. 3. Confirm the other person's request for a meeting, either verbally or by note, and assure him or her that I will be there. 4. Practice breathing and taking refuge in the island of myself to see how A. I have seeds of unkindness and anger as well as the habit energy to make the other person unhappy. B. I have mistakenly thought that making the other person suffer would relieve my own suffering. C. By making him or her suffer, I make myself suffer. 5. Apologize as soon as I realize my unskillfulness and lack of mindfulness, without making any attempt to justify myself and without waiting until the Friday meeting. We vow, with Lord Buddha as witness and the mindful presence of the Sangha, to abide by these articles and to practice wholeheartedly. We invoke the three gems for protection and to grant us clarity and confidence. Signed, the blank day of blank in the year blank in blank. Practice. This note can be used with the peace treaty. You can copy it and keep blank copies available in your home and wherever you need it. Peace note. Date, time. Dear blank, this morning, afternoon, you said, did, something that made me very angry. I suffered very much. I want you to know this. You said, did, blank. Please let us both look at what you said, did, and examine the matter together in a calm and open manner this Friday evening. Yours, not very happy right now, blank. Second body system. in a large community or even a large family, it isn't possible to always be aware of what is going on with everyone. So in Plum Village, we have developed something called the Second Body System to help build our Sangha. Your own body is your first body, and someone else in your family or Sangha is your second body. Your second body picks someone else to be her second body, and so on until you make a circle. In this way, everyone has someone to look after, and everyone is looked after by someone else. Looking after means taking care of and helping our second body when she is physically ill, afflicted in mind, or overworked. For example, when we are traveling together, we are responsible to see that our second body is not left behind. When our second body's spirits are low, we can find a way to raise them. When our second body is not able to smile, we can help her to smile. When she has the flu, we can bring her food and medicine. We use the second body system in all the Plum Village practice centers, and it raises the quality of our happiness in living together. It can be a wonderful way to stay connected to the whole community by taking care of just one member. In large families, it works the same. Practice. Your first body is yourself. Your second body is another person who you look after as an extension of yourself. If you are my second body, then I am your caring friend. Everyone chooses one person to be his second body, and that person chooses someone else. So we create a complete circle with each person linked to the next. You should feel very connected to your second body, as if he is a part of yourself that we want to pay attention to and care for. So if your second body is not well, you find out how you can assist him, such as bringing meals to his room and letting the community know that your second body is ill. If you notice that your second body is less than happy, by asking and observing, you may see a way that you can help. If you need to miss an activity, let your caring friend know. Your caring friend is not a police officer keeping watch over your activities. Rather, he is someone who shows special care and concern for you, and you in turn show special care for your second body. Remember that each person has somewhat different needs, so be sensitive and intelligent in how you show your care. Sometimes a few words of kindness are needed, and at other times, dwelling in your own island of conscious breathing is the best support for your friend. Caring for our second body is a very concrete practice for us to stay connected to each other and to realize how we are all truly parts of one body. Everyone in the Sangha has his second body. Thus, the person whom your second body is taking care of is your third body. Therefore, by taking care of your second body, you are taking care of the whole community. Hugging Meditation. When we hug, our hearts connect, and we know that we are not separate beings. Hugging with mindfulness and concentration can bring reconciliation, healing, understanding, and much happiness. The practice of mindful hugging has helped so many to reconcile with each other. Fathers and sons, mothers and daughters, friends and friends, and so many others. Practice. You may practice hugging meditation with a friend, your daughter, your father, your partner, or even with a tree. To practice, first bow and recognize the presence of the other. Close your eyes, take a deep breath, and visualize yourself and your beloved 300 years from now. Then you can enjoy 3 deep conscious breaths to bring ourselves fully there. Practice breathing in and breathing out to bring your insight of impermanence to life. Breathing in, I know that life is precious in this moment. Breathing out, I cherish this moment of life. Smile at the person in front of you, expressing your desire to hold him or her in your arms. This is a practice and a ritual. When you bring your body and mind together to produce your total presence, to become full of life, it is a ritual. When I drink a glass of water, I invest 100% of myself in drinking it. You should train yourself to live every moment of your daily life like that. Hugging is a deep practice. You need to be totally present to do it correctly. Then open your arms and begin hugging. Hold each other for 3 in and out breaths. With the first breath, you are aware that you are present in this very moment and you are happy. With the second breath, you are aware that the other is present in this moment and they are happy as well. With the third breath, you are aware that you are here together, right now on this earth, and you feel deep gratitude and happiness for your togetherness. You then may release the other person and bow to each other to show your thanks. You can also practice it in the following way. During the first in-breath and out-breath, become aware that you and your beloved are both alive. For the second in-breath and out-breath, think of where you will both be 300 years from now. And for the third in-breath and out-breath, go back to the insight that you're both alive. When you hug in such a way, the other person becomes real and alive. You do not need to wait until one of you is ready to depart for a trip. You may hug right now and receive the warmth and stability of your friend in the present moment. Hugging can be a deep practice of reconciliation. During the silent hugging, the message can come out very clear. Darling, you are precious to me. I am sorry I have not been mindful and considerate. I have made mistakes. Allow me to begin anew. Life becomes real at that moment. Architects need to build airports and railway stations so that there is enough room to practice hugging. Your hugging will be deeper, and so will your happiness. Deep listening and moving speech. When communication is cut off, we all suffer. When no one listens to us or understands us, we become like a bomb ready to explode. Compassionate listening brings about healing. Sometimes only 10 minutes of listening deeply can transform us and bring a smile back to our lips. Many of us have lost our capacity for listening and using loving speech in our families. It may be that no one is capable of listening to anyone else. So we feel very lonely, even within our own families. We go to a therapist, hoping that she is able to listen to us. But many therapists also have deep suffering within. Sometimes they cannot listen as deeply as they would like. So if we really love someone, we need to train ourselves to be a deep listener. We also need to train ourselves to use loving speech. We have lost our capacity to say things calmly. We get irritated too easily. Every time we open our mouths, our speech becomes sour or bitter. We have lost our capacity for speaking with kindness. Without this ability, we cannot succeed in restoring harmony, love, and happiness. In Buddhism, we speak of bodhisattvas, wise and compassionate beings who stay on earth to alleviate the suffering of others. The bodhisattva Avalokiteshvara, also called Kuan Yin, is a person who has a great capacity for listening with compassion and true presence. Kuan Yin is the bodhisattva who can listen and understand the sounds of the world, the cries of suffering. Practice. You have to practice breathing mindfully in and out so that compassion always stays with you. You listen without giving advice or passing judgment. You can say to yourself about the other person, "I am listening to him just because I want to relieve his suffering." This is called compassionate listening. You have to listen in such a way that compassion remains with you the whole time you're listening. That is the art. If halfway through listening, irritation or anger comes up, then you cannot continue to listen. You have to practice in such a way that every time the energy of irritation and anger comes up, you can breathe in and out mindfully and continue to hold compassion within you. It is with compassion that you can listen to another. No matter what the other person says, even if there is a lot of strong information and injustice in his way of seeing things, even if he condemns or blames you, continue to sit very quietly breathing in and out. If you don't feel that you can continue to listen in this way, let the other person know. Ask your friend, "Dear one, can we continue in a few days? I need to renew myself. I need to practice so that I can listen to you in the best way I can. If you are not in good shape, you are not going to listen in the best way you can. Practice more walking meditation, more mindful breathing, and more sitting meditation in order to restore your capacity for compassionate listening. Taking care of anger and other strong emotions. Our anger is like a small child crying out for his mother. When the baby cries, the mother takes him gently in her arms and listens and observes carefully to find out what is wrong. The loving action of holding her baby with tenderness already soothes the baby's suffering. Likewise, we can take our anger in our loving arms, and right away we will feel relief. We don't need to reject our anger. It is a part of us that needs our love and deep listening, just as a baby does. After the baby is calmed down, the mother can feel if the baby has a fever or needs a change of diaper. When we feel calm and cool, we too can look deeply at our anger and see clearly the conditions allowing our anger to rise. The book, Flowers in the Garden of Meditation, contains histories of different Zen masters. One master says if a monk gets angry, he should not keep his anger over more than one night. In Vietnam, children say, "Be angry, sad, or annoyed for 5 minutes." We have the right to be angry or sad, but 5 minutes is enough. The master of flowers in the garden of meditation gives us the right to be angry all night, but the next morning, our anger should have finished. If we practice being present with our strong emotions, the energy of loving kindness and caring will reduce the anger or sorrow. Every time a storm arises, we know to return home and close all the windows and doors to prevent the rain and wind from entering our house and destroying it. If there is no electricity, we light up candles or oil lamps. If the weather is cold, we make a fire. We create an area of safety inside while the storms are happening outside. A strong emotion is similar to a storm, and it can create a lot of damage. We need to figure out a way to protect ourselves, to create a safe environment, and to wait out the storm. We cannot sit and wait for the storm to go by quickly while we receive all the damage of the storm directly. Keeping our body and mind safe from the storm is our practice. After each storm, we become stronger, more solid, and soon we're no longer fearful of storms. We no longer pray for a calm sky and a calm ocean. Instead, we pray that we have the wisdom and strength to deal with the difficulties that arise in life. We don't have to wait until the emotional storm arises in us to begin to practice. We have to practice today, and every day, for 5 to 10 minutes. After a couple of weeks, we have a handle on our method of breathing, and when the emotional storms arise in us, we automatically remember to practice right away. Practice. Being with anger. When you feel angry, it's best to refrain from saying or doing anything. You may like to withdraw your attention from the person or situation that is watering the seed of anger in you. Take this time to come back to yourself. Practice conscious breathing and outdoor walking meditation to calm and refresh your mind and body. After you feel calmer and more relaxed, you can begin to look deeply at yourself and at the person and situation causing anger to arise in you. Often, when you have a difficulty with a particular person, he may have a characteristic that reflects a weakness of your own, which is difficult to accept. As you grow to love and accept yourself, this will naturally spread to those around you. Walking meditation can be very helpful when you are angry. Try reciting this verse as you walk. Breathing in, I know that anger is in me. Breathing out, I know this feeling is unpleasant. And then, after a while of walking meditation, breathing in, I feel calm. Breathing out, I am now strong enough to take care of this anger. Until you are calm enough to look directly at the anger, just enjoy your breathing, your walking, and the beauties of the outdoors. After a while, the anger will subside, and you will feel strong enough to look directly at it, to try to understand its causes, and to begin the work of transforming it. If when you are angry you practice sitting meditation, you can meditate on this gatha. Getting angry at each other in the ultimate dimension, we should only close our eyes and look into the future. In 100 years from now, where will you be, and where shall I be? This is the insight of impermanence. When you get angry with the one you love, you want to punish him to get relief. That is a natural tendency. But if you just close your eyes and visualize yourself and your beloved 100 or 300 years from now, you will get the insight of impermanence. Just one in-breath and one out-breath is enough for you to get the insight. When you open your eyes, you only want to do one thing, and that is to open your arms and hug that person. That is the only thing worth doing, to cherish his presence because of impermanence. It's only when you are unaware of the nature of impermanence that you get angry. You suffer not because things are impermanent. You suffer because things are impermanent and you don't know that they are impermanent. This is very important. So it is very helpful to practice mindful breathing in order to gain the insight of impermanence and keep it alive. Then you will know what to do and what not to do to make life more pleasant. Looking into a flower, looking into a cloud, looking into a living being, you touch the nature of impermanence. How important is impermanence? Without impermanence, nothing can be possible. Don't complain about impermanence. If things were not impermanent, how could a grain of corn become a corn plant? How could your child grow up? Impermanence is the ground of life. But although you live with the reality of impermanence every day, you deny it. When you practice looking deeply into things, you can discover the nature of impermanence and make it a living insight that you carry with you in every minute of your life. Practice. Strong Emotions 1. Every time sadness or anger or disappointment surface, you have the capacity to deal with it. Because your anger, your disappointment, is part of you, don't fight against it or oppress it. To do so is to commit a violent act against yourself. Instead, each time a storm of strong emotion comes up, sit quietly, keep your back straight, return to your breath, return to your body, close all the windows of your senses. You have 6 senses: eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, and mind. Don't look, don't listen, and don't continue thinking about the thing that you believe is the source of your suffering. That one sentence, one letter, one action, or one piece of news. Return to yourself. Take hold of your breathing. Follow your breathing. Hold tightly to your in-breath and out-breath, just like a captain holding tight to the wheel of a boat that is being tossed by the ocean waves. Mindful breathing is the anchor, the wheel, and the mast. Breathe a long breath, paying complete attention to your breathing in and out. Pay attention to your lower belly. See that your belly contracts when you breathe out and expands when you're breathing in. Keep your attention at the level of your lower belly. Don't let it wander in your head. Stop all thinking. Only closely follow your breath. Remind yourself, I have passed through many storms. Every storm has to pass. There is no storm that will stay there forever. This condition of the mind will also go by. Everything is impermanent. The storm is only a storm. We are not only a storm. We can find safety right in the storm. We will not let the storm create harm in us. When you can see it like that, when you remember it like that, you already begin to be your own boss, and you're no longer the victim of the emotional storm. Looking up at the top of a tree being tossed around by a storm, we have the feeling that the tree will be blown away by the storm at any moment. But if we look at the trunk and the base of the tree, we can see that the tree has many roots that attach deeply into the earth. We feel at ease. We know that the tree will stand strong. Dan Tien is the Vietnamese word for the energy point just below our belly button. It is the root of the tree. Pay attention to the lower part of your belly, and don't let your thinking, seeing, or hearing pull you to the top of the tree. Practice breathing like that for 5, 10, or 15 minutes, keeping your mind focused only on your breathing and your lower belly, and let your emotions go by. When the storm of emotion passes, you know that you have the capacity to protect yourself. You have the ability to manage your emotional storms. You have faith in yourself, and you're no longer fearful. You have ways to protect yourself every time an emotional storm comes up or surfaces. Therefore, you are very much at peace. Practice. Strong emotions, too. If you are experiencing a difficult time in life, you'll need to bolster your feelings of happiness before you can work on your challenges. It might seem as if the reverse were true, but by nourishing yourself with happiness first, you lay the groundwork to address your pain. The following meditation can help. Sit still in a quiet spot and bring your awareness to your breath. Use the first of the following meditations to create a sense of inner joy. The second meditation will then give you the courage to address your feelings of pain. 1. Breathing in, I am aware of the feeling of joy in myself. Breathing out, I smile to the feeling of joy that is in myself. Breathing in, I am aware of the feeling of happiness in myself. Breathing out, I smile to the feeling of happiness that is in myself. 2. Breathing in, I am aware of the painful feeling in me. Breathing out, I release the tension within that painful feeling in me. This audiobook is continued on Disc 3. Happiness by Thich Nhat Hanh, continued. Disc 3. Shining light. To shine light on a person means to use one's observation and insight in order to advise someone about his strengths and weaknesses in the practice, and to propose ways to practice that he can profit from. This is an important practice that works best when there are deep relationships, regular practice, and strong connections between the people involved. Practice. Each practitioner asks the Sangha to shine light upon her in order to help her to see herself more clearly, her strengths and weaknesses, and the quality of her practice. It is a very deep practice for those shining light as well as for the one receiving. It requires deep looking. We need to look at our brother and sister and get in touch with what we truly appreciate about his or her practice. The only motivation must be a desire to help that is generated from love and compassion for the person who is receiving. The concerned person joins her palms and asks the Sangha to shine light on her. Dear Sangha, please tell me of my strengths and weaknesses, and indicate to me the kind of practices I should take up in order to improve my practice. And then she will express herself concerning the practice she has taken up during the last few months. Dear Sangha, I have these weaknesses, this kind of habit energy. I've been trying to become aware of these habit energies and have used these methods in order to overcome and transform my habit energies. And so on. I've succeeded in these methods, but haven't been very successful in transforming this and that. And the person will tell the Sangha how she sees herself. Then each person in the Sangha takes a turn in order to tell her and the whole Sangha what he knows about that person. So everyone is listening, including the person who has asked the Sangha to shine light on her. We do this practice only when we've lived together for at least 3 months. It works quite well when the people have known each other for much longer than that. First, we water the flowers in the person on whom we're shining light. We tell her about her strengths, her goodness, and her positive aspects in order to help these things to grow. And then we talk about the things that could be improved, the weaknesses. This is always done with love, wisdom, and compassion. Because we are using loving speech, the person does not get hurt. Finally, we propose practices she can use to improve her temperament, and so on. When we propose something, it should come from our own experiences. If we have practiced, if we have overcome difficulties, if we have transformed, we propose very concrete things that have helped us. What we say will be very close to the truth and will help that person to see herself more clearly. She will profit and will take up the things we suggest in order to improve her practice. We're not criticizing, but rather supporting and sharing in each person's path and practice. It's important to have one person write down everything that has been said in the session of Shining Light. Another person will take the notes and put them into a letter called the Letter of Shining Light. The Letter of Shining Light has at least three parts. The first part of the letter talks about the positive points, the strengths, and the good qualities of the person. The second part of the letter deals with the weaknesses that are still there. And the third part of the letter is for making proposals as to how that person can improve his practice and quality of life. So there's a lot of love in the work of shining light on one person. In the beginning, we may be very reluctant. We may be a little bit afraid that people will talk about our weaknesses. It sounds unpleasant. But soon we may find that we like it. We learn so much. We understand ourselves much better after a session of shining light. If we sit in a session of shining light, we learn a lot. Everyone has his own vision. We combine everyone's vision into a collective vision, and we call it the Sangha eyes. Sangha eyes are always much brighter than the individual eyes. When we use our individual eyes to look, we may not see very clearly. But if 30, 40, 50 people combine their observation, their vision, then that will bring us closer to the truth. Writing a love letter. If we have difficulties with someone in our life, we might spend some time alone and write a letter to him. We can write the letter to someone we see every day, or just as effectively, to someone we have not seen for years. Many people have found this practice helpful when writing to a family member who is no longer living. To do the work of reconciliation is a great offering we can make to ourselves, our beloved ones, and our ancestors. We reconcile with our mother and father inside of us, and we might also discover a skillful way to reconcile with our mother and father outside of us. It is never too late to bring peace and healing into our blood family. Practice. Give yourself at least 3 hours to write a letter using loving speech. While you write the letter, practice looking deeply into the nature of your relationship. Why has communication been difficult? Why has happiness not been possible? You may want to begin like this. My dear son, I know you have suffered a lot during the past many years. I have not been able to help you. In fact, I have made the situation worse. It is not my intention to make you suffer, my son. Maybe I am not skillful enough. Maybe I try to impose my ideas on you, and I make you suffer. In the past, I thought you made me suffer, that my suffering was caused by you. Now I realize that I have been responsible for my own suffering, and I have made you suffer. As a father, I don't want you to suffer. Please help me. Please tell me of my unskillfulness in the past so that I will not continue to make you suffer, because if you suffer, I will suffer too. I need your help, my dear son. We should be a happy couple, father and son. I am determined to do it. Please tell me what is in your heart. I promise to do my best to refrain from saying things or doing things that make you suffer. You need to help me. Otherwise, it is not possible for me to do it. I can't do it alone. In the past, every time I suffered, I was inclined to punish you and say or do things that made you suffer. I thought that was the way to get relief, but I was wrong. I realize now that anything I say or do that makes you suffer makes me suffer also. I am determined not to do it anymore. Please help me. you will find that the person who finishes writing the letter is not the same person who began it. Peace, understanding, and compassion have transformed you. A miracle can be achieved in 24 hours. That is the practice of loving speech.